Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Love a good mystery that leaves you wanting more? Check out my podcast. Hi, I'm Kadra, the host of Perplexity, a Mystery Podcast. I tell tales every single week that have left me perplexed. You'll hear true crime cases, mysterious disappearances, learn about cults, hear baffling sightings of cryptids, chilling paranormal encounters, and even dark and weird history. I release new episodes every Wednesday, and you can listen anywhere podcasts are available. I'm also on Patreon, and you can even watch me on YouTube. Perplexity, a Mystery Podcast. Stories that will leave you perplexed.
Hey there, fellow true crime aficionados. We're the host of Bad Acts, a true crime podcast. I'm Danielle.
And I'm Aaron.
Join us every Thursday for twisted true crime tales of dark deeds and despicable people. We focus on lesser known unique stories with a new case each week. We've covered family annihilators, cannibals, revenge killings, killer kids, mysterious murders, survivor stories, and much more. We've even tackled stories of people who blamed zombies, vampires, ghosts, and voodoo for their bad acts.
Of course, we know they're the only ones to blame. You can find us everywhere you get your podcasts, or you can visit our website at badactspod.com.
If you like fresh stories and new perspectives on crime, Bad Acts will be your new jam. Join Bad Acts every Thursday. Stay safe, y'all.
See you soon.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining us once again for another Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy episode.
Yeah, thanks, everybody.
Oh, always good to hang out with you guys. Good to talk for to you, sure. Mom. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good.
Awesome.
Just excited for today's episode because it's a story we've all heard, but I did some research into it and it was like, wow, I never heard these parts of the story.
Really? Okay, yeah. Cool.
So what story do you have for us today?
I have a archaeology story. Ooh. About a thing called the Phaistos Disc.
Interesting.
It is very interesting. It's bizarre. I had never heard of it either. We saw it on some random show. It wasn't even about this, but about something else. And I was like, what the heck is a Phaistos disc? I've never heard of it. So I looked into it and it's pretty cool. Kind of interesting. Okay. What story do you have for us today?
I'm going to be talking about the assassination of President Abraham Lincoln.
Okay, going way
and
back.
With that, I have the Lincoln Club cooler. This drink is so, you can't fuck it up. It's 1.5 ounce of rum, 3 ounces of ginger ale. Add all the ingredients into a colander glass filled with ice. Stir gently and briefly to combine. There's no way this can be
basic.
Bad.
Well, it's rum, and you know how I feel about rum, so I might not like it.
The ginger ale is
good
with. I haven't found a drink that it's not good with. Whiskey,
true.
Great. Vodka, great. Rum.
Right. It's pretty basic.
Is what it is, but.
Okay, let's try it.
Yep, tastes like a high school party.
Yeah, the rum definitely blends in really well with the ginger ale. I don't think it's not very strong.
It's just something you drink at a high school party. No one knows what alcohol is yet. It's just, this one's clear. Let's pour it in a glass.
Right.
with some soda.
True. Yeah.
Okay. So when I picked this one, I picked it just because the drink. I was going to do another. I was going to do, not Nixon. One of the presidents that almost got assassinated. He got shot and lived. But I needed a bizarre or a brutal one. So I picked this one.
You did.
There's a lot of things that I had never heard about this because everyone knows the story. He was assassinated in a theater. Like, everyone's heard of it, but there's a lot of things that I didn't know about this.
Cool.
So, Abraham Lincoln was born on February 12th, 1809, in a log cabin in Hardin County, Kentucky. He grew up in poverty with little formal schooling, but he developed a passion for reading and self-education. His family moved several times, eventually settling in Illinois, where Lincoln worked as a farmhand, a rail splitter, a store clerk, and a surveyor before entering politics. In 1834, he was very tall for the time.
Right.
In 1834, he was elected to the Illinois State Legislature as a member of the Whig Party. During this time, he studied law on his own, passed the bar in 1836, and became a successful lawyer in Springfield. In 1842, he married Mary Todd, and together they had four sons, though only one, Robert, lived to adulthood.
Oh, wow.
Lincoln served a single term in the U.S. House of Representatives from 1847 to 1849, but gained little national attention at that time. After returning to his law practice, he reemerged politically in the 1850s, as the debate over slavery intensified. His debates with Senator Stephen A. Douglas in 1858, while unsuccessful in winning him a Senate seat, propelled him into national spotlight. In 1860, Lincoln won the presidency as a first Republican candidate to do so. His election sparked a secession in the South, and by the time he took office in March 1861, several southern states had left the Union, and the Civil War soon followed.
Okay.
As President Lincoln forced enormous challenges that became known for his political skill, and he was determined to protect the Union at all costs. He issued the Emancipation
Proclamation.
This up
in, like, I know. A
couple of episodes ago. Emancipation Proclamation.
There you go.
1863, reframing the war as a fight not only to reunite the nation, but also end slavery. His Gettysburg Address and second inaugural speech further cemented his legacy as a leader of the moral civilization. In early 1865, the Union was on the brink of victory. Lincoln had just begun his second term, committed to a vision of national reconciliation and rebuilding after the Civil War. But on April 14th, 1865, only days after General Robert E. Lee's surrender, his life was cut short by an assassin's bullet at Ford's Theater. Who was the man that killed him? John Wilkes Booth. John was born to a family of prominent stage actors, and at the time of the assassination, was a famous actor himself and a Confederate sympathizer. In the late 1860s, he joined a secret society called the Knights of the Golden Circle, which main objective was to start a new country known as the Golden Circle, which theoretically would have been centered in Havana and would include Mexico, Central America, northern parts of South America, Cuba, Haiti, the Dominican Republic, and other Caribbean islands, with the idea of keeping slaves. So they were trying to set up their own country. Basically. In the middle of, like, connecting a string of area in Central America, basically.
Okay. Not good.
Yeah. This obviously opposed the ideas that Lincoln was running on. In 1863, Lincoln issued General Order 252, which stopped prisoner exchange with the South until all prisoners from the North were released. Booth came up with a plan that would force the North to surrender to the Southern prisoners. He recruited Samuel Arnold, George Atzerodt, I'm sure I fucked that name up, David Harold, Michael O'Loughlin, Lewis Powell, and John Surratt to help him kidnap President Lincoln.
Oh.
So this is the part that I never knew anything about. Everyone knows that Lincoln was at a play when he got killed, but I didn't know that there was multiple tries at this.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't know that either.
So the president had actually been, he had seen John Wilkes Booth performing on stage and admired his acting and even invited him to the White House, which Booth denied.
Wow. Wow. Yeah.
On March 17th, the group attempted the kidnapping of the president. Booth was staying at the National Hotel when Lincoln was supposed to attend a play at the Campbell General Hospital. The gang were waiting outside the hospital ready to snatch the president. However, Lincoln never showed up, and that is because he was attending a ceremony at the National Hotel. So if John Wilkes Booth had just stayed at his hotel that night, he would have been able to get the president. But he thought he was going to this play across town. And so they were waiting outside ready to kidnap Lincoln. Lincoln never showed up because he was at John Wilkes' hotel at a ceremony.
Wild. Wow. Kidnapping would have been preferable, I think. I don't think he needed to assassinate anybody.
Yeah. Well, there was another attempt. So,
jeez.
After this failed attempt, the motive went from kidnapping to assassination. Before the famous murder during a play, Booth attempted to kill Lincoln one time before this. In mid-August 1984, Lincoln was riding his horse late at night to a cabin about 3 miles from the White House that he would stay at in the summer. A sentry guarding the cabin reportedly heard a gunshot ring out, and moments later, the president's horse, Old Abe, which is interesting to name your horse after yourself.
That is weird. Maybe the horse had that name to begin with.
Maybe he was named after the horse.
Maybe.
So anyways, Old Abe came peeling around the corner. The president was on the horse, but he was missing his iconic hat. Everyone knows the Abraham Lincoln hat.
Oh, it's like the
Thanksgiving hat, basically. Gosh,
the stovepipe hat.
So Lincoln said that as he was riding home, an incompetent hunter had fired his rifle near the horse, and the horse had been frightened and took off at breakneck speeds, causing his hat to fall off.
Wow.
The sentry calmed the horse and told Lincoln that he would check things out in the morning. And after walking around the property, he had found Abe's hat with a bullet hole through it at an upward angle, indicating that the shooter was aiming at Lincoln's head from the ground nearby the road.
Wow. Because
the hat was so tall, it came in through the side and flew out the top. So, nearly missed him. This event led to Lincoln always having a bodyguard, which kind of turned out to be the first Secret Service.
Oh, okay. Like,
the Secret Service didn't develop until, I think, a couple presidents later. But they were, because the Secret Service was initially started for counterfeit money, basically. And then they developed, like, protecting the president. But, yeah. So, since this didn't work, Booth came up with a new plan. On April 14th, 1965, Booth was at the Ford Theater picking up his mail when he learned that the president was going to be in attendance at a play called Our American Cousin. Since Booth worked at the theater, he knew the layout and devised a plan to kill the president that night. Booth went to the boarding house owned by John Surratt's mother. He was one of the guys he recruited for the original kidnapping. But she owned a bar in Maryland and this boarding house. So John had her send a letter to her bar telling the gang to meet up in Maryland where the play was being held.
Mm.
So according to Ward Lamont Lincoln confided in him that he had a dream 3 nights before his assassination where he was wandering through the White House. He could hear cries of mourning and track them down to a casket with a covered body. When he asked the soldiers guarding the body who was in the casket, the soldier replied, "The president, likely an assassination."
Oh.
So 3 days before this happened, he had a weird dream about that.
I don't like that.
Yeah. So the gang met up at 8:45 p.m. and Booth gave the men their assignments. Powell was told to kill Secretary of State William Seward at his home, and another gang member was ordered to kill Vice President Andrew Johnson at the Mirkwood Hotel while John kills Lincoln. The presidential party arrived at the theater a little bit late and were sat in a balcony with his wife and Major Henry Rathbone and his wife. Lincoln usually had several guards with him after his first assassination attempt. However, tonight was different. One guard was stationed at the White House, and John Parker, his personal bodyguard, had gone to the bar at intermission. So he was sitting up there and left... went to the bar with the, I think the valet for Lincoln's carriage.
Wow.
Booth was drinking at a bar nearby, waiting for the perfect time. He entered the theater around 10 p.m., made his way to the presidential box. There was a porter at the door who let Booth inside, knowing that he was familiar with the porter because John performed there all the time. And so okay. The porter was like, okay, yeah, go ahead. You can go in the box.
Oh. Okay, I thought maybe he was in on it.
No. So he let John Wilkes Booth in, and inside the door was another door. So it was kind of like a little waiting room, vestibule. Basically. And so John Wilkes Booth barred the first door that the porter was at and then made his way inside the box.
Oh.
Yeah. John was armed with a knife and a flintlock pistol. Also, if you look up pictures of it, it's like, wow, this is like, it looks like a pirate gun. Like, so John.
Did you say a flintlock pistol?
Yeah. Booth aimed his, or he timed his shot with laughter from the crowd because he was familiar with the play and he knew when there was laughter breaks. So he timed it with the laughing crowd and shot Abraham Lincoln in the back of the head.
Oh.
Rathbone turned to see Booth standing behind the president with a smoking gun. He attacked Booth, and the struggle, was stabbed by Booth in the forearm.
Oh, okay.
Booth jumped off the 12-foot high balcony, and in doing so, had tangled up his riding spurs in a flag hanging off the balcony, and ended up breaking his leg.
Oh,
he ran across stage. And yelled something similar. So there's been arguments about what exactly he said, but it's something similar to "Sic Semper Tyrannis," which in English is roughly translated to "Thus always the tyrants."
Okay.
Booth stabbed orchestra leader William Withers on his way out and struck a man holding a horse with the back of his knife and stole the horse. Which, I think about it, if John was a actor that worked there and he just stabbed this random orchestra leader guy, did he just not like him? And he was like,
yeah, well, that's
I
was
the president, I might as well just go and stab this dude.
That is 100% what I was thinking. 100%. Like, he was like, I'm here and I don't like this guy. That's exactly what I thought too. That's funny.
So two doctors were in attendance at the play and rushed to the box, one being lifted by the crowd up to the box because he had barred up the door.
Right.
So they couldn't get in.
Yeah.
So this is where they discovered Lincoln hardly breathing. They originally thought it was a stab wound, so they undressed Lincoln only to discover the entry wound right behind Lincoln's left ear.
Oh.
Yeah. So since it was a flintlock pistol, they're not very reliable. It didn't exit his brain.
Oh.
The bullet entered from the left side behind the ear and lodged itself in the frontal lobe. Lincoln was moved to the closest bed to the theater. So
Okay.
Just imagine you're at home. Four people come knocking on your door carrying President Abraham Lincoln. And they're like, we need your bed right now.
We need to lay him down.
Yeah. Because he was still alive at this point. He's breathing hardly. Like, because one of the doctors were able to pull the clots out of his brain, which would help him breathe better. So, yeah.
I don't like it.
They just bring him to a random person's house and lay him up.
Yeah.
Which is just a mad... Oh, my God. That must be insane.
That's wild.
So, Lincoln was brought to Taylor William Pearson's house, where he was laid on a small bed. Remember, Lincoln's tall, so his feet were hanging off the bed. Yeah. It was just a normal person's bed. But physicians spent the night removing blood clots from the brain to relieve pressure. However, they knew the president was essentially dead. Lincoln officially died the following day at 7 a.m. So he was alive from around 10:15 to 10:30 and died at 7.
Wow.
Okay. While this was happening, Powell made his way to William Seward, one of the other guys of the gang who was sent to kill the head of state. William was laid up in bed after being thrown from a carriage. So Powell had told his wife that he was sent by a physician to show him how to use a new medication prescribed to him. Seward's son stopped him at the doorway and said his father was sleeping. Powell turned to go down the stairs until his sister came out and said Seward was awake. Powell immediately turned towards his son and pulled his pistol, but it malfunctioned and didn't fire. So Powell beat his son unconscious with it. Powell pushed past Seward's daughter and began stabbing him in the face and neck. However, Seward had a neck brace on that protected his jugular, and he survived the attack, only having received scars on his cheeks. So if he wasn't thrown from the carriage, he probably would have died. He had a neck brace on that protected him from the stabbing. Yeah.
Wow.
This shit should be made into a movie. Like, everyone has heard the story. Like, yeah, someone shot Abraham Lincoln, but I didn't know all this other nonsense was happening. So the guy who was assigned to kill Vice President Andrew Johnson got drunk while waiting for him to appear at the bar. Because he was supposed to be staying at a hotel. And so he sat at the bar waiting for Andrew Johnson to get there.
And he never did. Oh, wow.
So he eventually wandered off, ended up losing his knife before getting a room in a nearby hotel. So Andrew Johnson was safe.
Wow.
Booth and another gang member were tracked down to a barn, which they were sleeping in. So they... After killing him, they made their way across the border into the south, where they had met up with a doctor, and they told the doctor that they were wounded Confederate soldiers. And so the doctor put a splint on him, let him out, and they eventually made their way to a barn, which they were sleeping in. The authorities surrounded the barn and threatened to set it on fire. Booth yelled out, "I will not be taken alive," and scrambled out the back of the barn as the barn was set on fire, where he was snuck up on and shot in the back of the head, only an inch lower than where Lincoln was shot. John Wilkes Booth died on the farm 3 hours later.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't know that about the assassination.
Any of that.
Yeah. Very interesting.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Wow, very interesting.
Let's hear your story, Mom.
Okay. My story is about the Phaistos disc. And I may be mispronouncing it, but that's what I'm going to go with. In July 1908, an Italian archaeologist was excavating the first Minoan palace on the south coast of Crete. The archaeologist was working in the basement of one of the outbuildings of the Phaistos Palace, and he made an interesting discovery. The basement had several rooms that were only accessible from above. The rooms were covered with a thin layer of plaster. Inside of the room, it contained rich black earth, ashes, and burnt bovine bones. That's a really hard combination of words. Burnt bovine bones. Cow. Well, I was wondering, and it was specifically saying bovine, and I was wondering what the difference was, and I was looking it up, and it said it could be anything from like an oxen to a cow to something along those lines. So it wasn't specific, but this is old, so it's not like a domesticated cow. It's something from 3,000 to 4,000 years ago, basically. So a while ago. Weird. Within the earthy layer, the archaeologists found a strange disc. It is now known as the Phaistos disc. Over the years, experts have disagreed on the age of the disc, but current belief is that it's around 3,000 to 4,000 years old. It is about the size of a dinner plate, roughly 16 centimeters in diameter and about 2 centimeters thick. It's not fully circular. It is somewhat egg-shaped, with one side of the diameter being slightly more narrow than the other, and the thickness is also not uniform. It's fairly round. Like, you have to really look at it. It's not precisely round, but when you look at it, it's like, okay, it's round.
Is it like a discus? I'm imagining like a discus disc.
Kind of, yes. Like it's concave on one side.
Oh, here, I can explain.
Concave on one side, known as side A, and convex on the other side, which is called side B. It's made of fine grain clay. Yeah.
Okay.
It's made of fine grain clay that was embossed and inscribed in a very sophisticated way prior to the clay being fired. While the clay was still soft, individual stamps of different shapes and design were pressed into it. A sharp stylus of some sort was used to draw lines and other markings on the disc. There is a continuous spiral from the outer edge towards the center. Radial lines between some of the figures at different intervals. There's 5 dots on the outside edge, as well as some oblique lines. The markings are on both sides of the disc. In total, there are 45 distinct signs occurring a total of 241 times. Side A contains 122 symbols and side B has 119. Are you trying to look it up?
Yeah, it looks...
It's pretty trippy looking.
And it was found with burned bovine?
So in the room that it was found in, there was a bunch of dirt. And mixed in with the dirt, there were ashes and miscellaneous bovine bones. So I don't know if it was like ceremonial, that's why the bovine bones were there, or I don't know. I didn't really see anything that explained why the bones were in there. They don't necessarily seem to be linked to the disc. They were just in the proximity of it.
The inscribings are weird too. Like,
yes, they are. The direction of some symbols is varied, with orientation being rotated 90 or 180 degrees. Side A also contains a sign that appears to have either been degraded, like it was marred in some way, but it's unidentifiable to other ones. It's possible this sign is one of the other 45, and it's just been like scratched over or rubbed off or something, or it's an entirely unique 46th sign. However, most scholars believe that it is just one of the other 45, but you can't really tell which one because of the age of the disc. Many of the signs are depictions of physical objects or parts of objects like people, animals, plants, or tools. Some of the signs are detailed. For example, there's a human head wearing what appears to be a feathered headdress, while others are very basic geometric shapes. The frequency use of the symbols is widely varied, with some of them appearing only once, while others appear close to 20 times. The order is also varied, with some symbols often appearing together as a pair, yet in other areas they are separate from each other. The signs are laid out on each side as a as a single spiral text, which is split by inscribed radial strokes into groups. Side A has 31 groups. Side B has 30 groups of signs. The number of signs in a group varies from 2 to 7. The groups are referred to as words, but the true meaning of the symbol groupings are unknown. But in general, scholars call them words. On the outer edge of each side, there is a radial line followed by 5 dots. Scholars believe this is to indicate the beginning of the text, if you want to call it text. And that's basically what they're, a lot of them are assuming, that it's like some kind of text that's like pictogram kind of thing, like hieroglyphics.
Yeah.
And the thought is that you should read it from the outer edge towards the center in a clockwise direction. Why they chose that, I don't know, maybe because that made more sense than to go the other way. This is the current generally accepted method and concept by scholars and researchers of the disc. However, in the beginning, it was suggested that you should read from the center outward, because that would be easier to start the inscription than fit the disc to size from there.
Yeah.
But the concept, it would make sense to me to start on the inside, because you could put as many stamps as you wanted. And then
you can end
be
the story
done
when you want,
and shave off the excess disc, shave off the rest of the clay when you were done telling the story. But now scholars are saying, no, it goes the other way. You start at the outside and go inward. The concept is starting on the outer edge, pressing the individual stamps into the clay separately, then inscribing lines to indicate like that you're following it in a row. That's what the spiral line is for, and then the radial lines going in a perpendicular orientation to the spiral is what allows it to be broken up into those groups or words. And all of that indicates that the creation of the disc required a lot of technological skill and forethought. Most people believe the orientation of the symbols bears no specific relevance, and some believe it might have been done out of necessity to fit the character within the given space. Like I said, some of them are, I don't want to say horizontal, but they're oriented around the disc, and then some of those symbols are rotated 90 or 180 degrees. So sometimes they're upside down, or they're, you know, rotated to the right or left. And the belief is that that's not relevant, not important,
I mean,
just
they
a noted
have erasers
thing
back then.
Exactly. And you're pressing it into wet clay.
Yeah.
So you get the
sometimes
one chance.
Make a mistake.
Right. The origin of the disc is unknown, with some researchers believing the clay the disc is made from is not local to the area. Also, the human figures and the symbols weren't wearing clothing common to the region, and the symbols weren't like anything known to Crete. Therefore, they believe the disc was created elsewhere and brought to Crete by another culture.
So I think about this sometimes, but if the world ended right now and a couple of surviving humans survive, like, and then millions of years later or thousands of years later, they come across like a printed email that you wrote, and it's like, yeah, I'll send you those labels in a couple minutes. Like, and it's like, they just have to interpret what you mean by that. And it's like, just you shipping, like sending out like just a normal email. And
random,
so
nothing.
That, like, sometimes, like,
yeah,
what if we just find something that's like, yeah, I bought 3 chickens at the store today or something.
Right.
Like,
Somebody was doodling and they had some stamps.
Yeah. And it's just like, oh, this is an entire story of how a civilization was fought and won. Yeah. And it's like, just some dude, like,
it was just a dude playing
and was just,
yeah,
doodling.
Exactly. Others believe that some of the symbols are similar to signs found in the region on other forms of pottery, leading some to believe at least one of the symbols might just be a potter stamp, basically like signing your work at like the clay store where you made a bowl and then you put your initials on the bottom. Some people think that's what it is. Yeah.
Imagine the, what's that pottery place in town?
The next of kiln.
Yeah. You just make like a little painted cat and it's like, this was an artisan piece handcrafted.
Yeah. It's like, exactly. Just, so
someone doing like, they paid 10 bucks and painted a pot and got it fired.
Yep. They're like, cool. Other pieces found after the disc, including jewelry, have similar markings. The current theory of most examiners is that the disc was a local creation. Again, nobody really knows where it came from, how it got there, so there's a lot of debate about it, as well as there is debate about the meaning of the symbols and the design of the disc. Some believe the symbols are similar to hieroglyphs from other languages, and therefore it must represent an ancient language. But nobody knows what language. While others believe the symbols actually represent something very different, ranging from geometric theory to a calendar, to an astronomical interpretation, to an ancient game board, or even a depiction of a mythical labyrinth. Although scholars don't agree on many things about the disc, many agree that without further discoveries, it's unlikely that the mystery of the disc will ever be solved. Because they haven't found anything that says human head wearing a headdress equals this word or equals this action or anything.
Well, they have one that's on the Wikipedia for it. It's just like an assumed one, I'm assuming. But a guy walking, pedestrian, the head with the headdress, plumbed head, head with like a weird thing on the cheek, tattoo head. Body with arm behind captive. Like they have, assuming a rough translation, but it's just
no, it's just a description. I think they're just describing it. I don't think they have no idea what any of those symbols mean.
And then someone's going to say, oh, we figured it out, and no one's going to listen to them. And I mean, how
because
There's
in order, you have to have a key.
Stuff like that. Yeah.
This is the only one of these things. There in the basement, there was a tablet that had similar inscriptions and stuff on it. And they think that somehow it might be related. But scholars even argue about that and are like, no, these are two separate and distinct things. And they don't even bear any relation to each other. And you can't interpret what this one means into what this one means because they weren't meant to go together.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's like saying, like, Sumerian, I think, is the first language that we're ever able to, like, kind of transcribe.
Maybe.
And that was,
I don't know.
I think it's Sumerian. Maybe there's earlier ones, but when I was taught in school, I think it was Sumerian. They developed the numbers, like, number one, that was Sumerians, but that's like saying, yeah, that they were the first civilization, but what were they speaking in America at the time? Like
nothing. Yeah.
I mean, they had be some sort of communication. If the Sumerians had their own society, what was happening in South America, what was happening in North America, what was happening in Asia, what was happening in in Russia, like, they're not the first. I feel like there's different things earlier or later or older that we just haven't found enough information on. Like, I think Sumerian's probably just the one we have the most amount of evidence to translate to other don't know.
History
is very confusing because people agree and don't agree on things. And
then it's ever changing because the more discoveries are made, then I remember when I was, I'd have to look it up, but hieroglyphics were unknown what that was. Everybody figured it was some kind of language, but nobody knew how to read it.
And then there's people that like
a long time, and now they do.
They know, and then they won't take anyone else's interpretation on those. Like that when that one, the Egypt guy went on Joe Rogan. It's like,
yes,
no, everything I say is right. Everything they say is wrong. Like it,
I could not listen to that guy. It drove me crazy. In the first 15 minutes, I was like, I can't handle it.
I listened to it, and it was just like, but what? Keep your mind open. He's like, no, everything I say is right.
Nope.
I'm the head Egyptologist. Like,
I'm the dude.
There's not a slightest chance you're wrong. You weren't there.
You're
playing telephone with the past.
Right, exactly.
The telephone game.
That's crazy.
That should be the lead example. It's like, the person next to you whispers something and then you whisper and then it's always different, but
yeah. Yeah. Do you have a chaser for us today?
I do. My chaser is the movie, what is it, 28 years later? There's 28 days later, 28.
Oh.
The new one that came out this year. It's like the zombie.
Okay, like,
zombies are actually scary in this. Like, I like scary zombie movies.
Yeah.
But like The Walking Dead's obviously the best zombie production that's ever been made.
But I would agree.
These ones are like scary. They run fast and there's like different types of them. And like,
no, I don't want fast zombies.
They're using bows and arrows and they live on like an island. It's a really good watch.
I hate it. I don't want it.
Yeah. It's scary zombies and I like scary zombies. I want more scary werewolf movies, but I can't find good werewolf movies.
No.
They make good vampire movies, but not werewolf movies, which is kind of dumb.
Can't remember the last time I saw a werewolf movie.
I watched one. It was like Twilight, but not dumb. It was like.
Yeah.
But it was kind of like a. God, I think it was Sarah Jessica Parker was the main person, and she was a vampire hunter, but also hunted werewolves. It was like Bloods versus Crips, but Bloods were vampires and the Crips were werewolves. That's literally what it was. Werewolves. It was like gang violence in an inner city.
Oh, it was my like goodness. From
vampires. It was a good watch. I can't remember the name of it. I think it was like Underground or Under. Start with a U, I think. But anyways, what's your chasing mom?
My chaser is a watch recommendation as well. It's a show that we recently binged on Prime called Hotel Costiera. And it's set in Italy on the Amalfi Coast, specifically set in the town of Positano. And I loved just the visual of the town, and now I want to go there because it looks gorgeous. But the show is about this guy who is former military, and he works at the Hotel Costieri, and he helps solve their problems. And like when people go missing, he goes and tries to find them. And if something is stolen, he tries to help solve who stole it. And it's really cute and funny, and it's set in Italy, and it's gorgeous.
Like a good guy version of Mr. In-Between?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. That is, it definitely popped into my head. Yeah.
Because I've been watching that. I watched it for the third time all the way through now. Like, that's
it's so good,
right?
Now,
but yeah, it's really good. I've seen it come up on my Amazon, so I'll have to check it out.
It's good. I think you'll like it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. to check it out.
Definitely. I think that wraps us up.
Yeah, I think so too. Thanks for listening, everybody. Make sure to check us out on all your favorite social medias. If you have any story recommendations for us, feel free to DM us or drop a comment on anything we do and let us know any suggestions.
For sure. We read and look at all of our comments and try to respond. And sometimes I'm forgetful and I forget to do it for a little while, but then I try and get back to it. So if you've ever made a comment and one of us didn't respond to you, then make another comment, or you can send us an email. You can always reach us that way too. So
true.
All our contact information is in the show notes.
Yes. Well, love you, Mom.
Love you too, bud.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.